RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Reality Check Radio for this breakfast extra this morning with Marie. I am talking to Chloe Cole, who is a detransitioner, a vocal opponent against the dangers of gender-affirming care in minors, and she's out here in New Zealand for the Family First Forum on the Family this weekend. Chloe, good morning. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Is it first time to New Zealand?
Yes, it is. This is probably the second furthest that I've been out of the out of my home country of the US. I was just in Australia just a few days ago.
So you just hopped over, yeah. And I hear you have been to Hobbiton, so you've ticked a big Kiwi box now. So you're all set.
Yes.
So your story is a fascinating one. Kick it off for our listeners. Tell us a little bit about your journey, how you got involved in what you're doing now in regards to your gender journey.
I am a detransitioner, meaning that I went through the process of a social and medical gender transition and came back out of it and returned to my birth identity as female. And I went through this process while I was still a child, actually, between the ages of 12 to 16. And I'm 19 years old now, speaking on behalf of what happened to me and against the use of this mutilated practice in children and trying to advocate for the rights of these children to growing up with their bodies fully intact, to the parents with being given the best information that they can get on this from the doctors and being allowed to raise their children as they see fit the best possible way that they can, and for a better standard of care in general for patients who have gender dysphoria.
So what started your gender dysphoria? Why do you think as a child you felt you needed to be a boy?
Long before I started transitioning or having feelings of discomfort that I attributed to gender dysphoria, I was a bit of a tomboy growing up, especially the older that I got and especially around puberty. I felt like I enjoyed associating more with the boys from school, and like I related a bit more to my male role models than my female role models. I liked having my hair short. I started to reject like more feminine clothing the older that I got. I liked playing rough. I liked exploring. I liked playing video games with my older brothers. With the early puberty that I was going through, my breasts were developing at around the age of 8 or 9, just as I was going into my fourth grade year. I don't know what the equivalent would be here in
year four here. So
yeah, but it just. Developing physically so young brought a lot of attention to me and also a lot of emotions that I didn't really feel quite prepared for. And it was very overwhelming at times. And as a girl who already was kind of a little bit sort of the type of kid to think outside the box and didn't always relate to my peers, I felt like there was something that just set me apart from everybody around me. And at times it even felt as though there was something wrong with me. And especially in regards to being female, there were a lot of times when I felt like I would never be feminine enough, or I would never be pretty enough, or my body would just, that I was ugly. And that there is just no way that I ever would make a good woman. And I really wanted to give up sometimes. It wasn't until I learned about the transgender community, though, through the internet, mainly through social media platforms like Instagram at the age of 12, that I really started to consider, well, maybe I'm just not supposed to be a woman. Maybe this is the reason why I feel so uncomfortable with myself and why I don't feel like I have much of an identity of my own, is because I was just made differently. That I have the body of a girl with the mind of a boy.
Your parents, when you went to them with this, what was their reaction?
So I wrote them a letter because I was very nervous about presenting this to them face to face. You know, they were very shocked. I really don't think any parent expects to hear this from their own child. They certainly did not. They knew that I was a tomboy. They knew that I was struggling a bit socially. But they had no idea that I was feeling this way until I told them. They were not really sure how to approach this with me, but they knew that it was a psychological health issue. So they decided to get a therapist involved to hopefully teach me how to cope with these feelings and just, they didn't want me to really pursue transitioning, actually. They just wanted to allow me to be a tomboy, to be a kid, and to grow up before I was allowed to make any decisions that would affect
the entire course of my life. Sounds very, very wise to me. So the next step was seeing a psychologist. Or a therapist. So how did that sort of map out? Because there must have come a point in regards to transitioning that a decision was made or a option was applied to you for you to make a decision that is incredibly life-altering.
It was horrible, actually. I mean, it did really nothing. These therapists and psychologists that I was seeing weren't really doing much to help me. And my mom and dad could see that I was going to therapy, but I wasn't getting any better. They weren't allowed in the room during the sessions that I was having, so they didn't know what was actually being discussed or what I was really going through. So they decided to step in themselves and talk to the psychologists without me and ask them what was going on and why I wanted to do this so young and what the rush was and what the risk would be if I were to regret this down the line. All very reasonable questions up until this point. Well, the psychologists told them, well, children already know what their gender identity is from a young age because it's something that is innate. She understands what her identity is and she understands what it is that she wants. And if you deny her of this treatment, if you don't allow her to transition right now, they start talking about the high suicide statistics within the transgender community. And they use that as a means of convincing my mom and dad that this is basically life or death for me, that without these treatments, I would become suicidal because I would be denied basically a human right. I would be denied a fundamental expression of a fundamental part of my identity, they said. And when you're only given two options out by the doctors of your child, when you're told that it's either life or death, that you're either going to have a dead daughter or a living transgender son, you're going to take the options that are given to you. My mom and dad loved me. They loved me to death. They wanted me to live. They wanted me to thrive and be happy. They weren't given any other choice by these other adults who were supposed to help us through this as a family.
So what was next? Is that when puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones got involved?
It was very quickly after that appointment that I was referred to an endocrinologist. And after like a few meetings, I was given a prescription for Lupron to suppress my puberty. This is a drug that has been used to chemically castrate sex offenders. It's been used in late stage reproductive cancers. And it is not easy for the body to process this drug. And it's certainly not easy for a perfectly healthy girl to basically have all hormone production and her puberty stopped in its tracks. I basically went into a phase of a childhood onset menopause while I was on it. So I was experiencing hot flashes, uncomfortable sensations that accompanied that, like sweating, tingling, itching. I was very lethargic while I was on it, and it just sucked to be on. I was put on this drug with testosterone already in mind by my doctors. So it was only about a month between starting the two. And once I was on it, it was about a weekly course of the injections for the hormones. And the changes were very quick. The voice drop, the changes to my face, the masculinization of my body. And I basically went into my high school years looking completely like and being socialized as a boy, because other than kids who I went to school with before, nobody could actually tell that I was a girl. They all just thought I was like a 14, 15, 16-year-old boy. I thought that I was happy for a bit. This is all so new. It was also novel and exciting, all these changes to my face, my appearance, and the way that I was treated by other people, being accepted into new friend groups as a boy, being accepted by my teachers and everybody around me under this new identity. And yet it all seemed to fall apart. And I was falling apart. My health, both physically and psychologically, I was getting physical complications from this, mainly relating to my urinary tract and also instances of pelvic pain and experiencing atrophy of my reproductive organs as well.
So were any of these side effects discussed with you before this medications were started?
Some of them were, albeit in very vague terms. And no matter how much these doctors would have tried to explain to me, you can't expect a child to be able to undertake something that's going to affect... You can't expect a child to undertake changes that will affect the entire course of their physical, their sexual and reproductive, their psychological and social development going forward when they have not already physically full, when they have not already fully developed at all. When they, you can't just expect a child to be able to decide, okay, do I want to disrupt the only process by which I can become an adult?
But then, like for you, you even went further though. So talk me through that, because you I mean, so at that point you were already starting to have complications. There were symptoms that were potentially raising alarm, but you didn't stop there.
I was under the belief that this was my identity, that I was actually a boy, because I had been really not given any different information at all by my doctors, by the transgender community, by the psychologists. Nobody. I was really under the delusion that in spite of being born female, I was a male and that this was my only option. It wasn't until I had the surgery that my attitude towards transitioning and towards this identity really started to make a shift. Because I think that a big part of it was that that's when things really became real. That was the turning point, because it was the most drastic out of all of the treatments that I had for my body. The post-op process was really a living hell. It was just before my 16th birthday. And, you know, I started to think, like, I'm only a few years out from adulthood. And I have to start thinking about things like, well, I've never had a relationship before, but what if I want to get married when I'm an adult? What if I want to have children of my own? And I had this epiphany one day that I wanted to become a mother. I wanted to fill the role of a wife in a marriage. And I want to naturally have children of my own, to get pregnant, to give birth, to nurse my children. And I could have potentially lost my ability to conceive children by having my puberty stopped and by being on male hormones for so long. And I would never be able to have that option of going through that beautiful experience of breastfeeding my own children. And this broke my heart. And it was then that I realized, like, this is never actually going to make me into a man. This was a failure. I should never have gone through any of this. And I need to stop now, or else I'm going to lose so much more of myself if I don't.
So just for the listeners to clarify, I mean, you, it was a double mastectomy that you had.
Yeah, it was the surgical removal of both of my breasts.
Yeah.
And there's no coming back from that. There's no regrowing breast tissue. There's no being able to restore the form or the function or the sensation of that area after you remove it.
So where are you at now? I mean, you've done a lot of work once you realized that you weren't wanting to do this, that you needed to stop. How was the reaction from the people that were in charge of your medical care?
Oh, they were completely negligent, actually. When I told them about the regret, the psychological and physical trauma, the complications, when I asked about how I stopped this and what my life is going to look like going forward. As I've switched healthcare providers since, and in my old, with my old healthcare provider, they still have me listed as a man named Leo. They still have a male sex marker, and they still have my old chosen name. And absolutely no notes about my detransition, even though I told every single one of my doctors and psychologists about what was happening. They didn't care.
I know that when I spoke to Dr. Carrie Mendoza recently, and she said part of the battle is with these healthcare providers is that they everything is based on billing codes, and they haven't created codes yet for detransition.
No, yeah, there are no codes to bill for. So part of the problem is that a lot of doctors get nervous because they don't really know. There are no standards of care at all. So they don't know exactly what to follow. All detransition as a phenomenon, and those of us who go through it, are not recognized at all by the healthcare system, and usually not by doctors either. So when you have a completely unknown outcome, which is ridiculous, this is absolutely something that should have been considered before all these other standards were written, you're going to have disastrous outcomes like mine. Mm-hmm. And the healthcare system has to account for those of us who are going to come out of this the other way, who are hurt, who have lost parts of their bodies, who've had their health compromised and have lost years of their life to this and are traumatized.
Mm. So your parents, they obviously love you regardless of whether you are Chloe or Leo or back to Chloe. So, you know, they've been with you on this journey. Are they equally as frustrated too with how the clinicians interacted with them over that time?
Absolutely. I mean, they never believed that I was a boy. They never believed that I was their son or that I was transgender. They knew that I was just a distressed adolescent girl and that I needed psychological help, that I didn't deserve to be lied to, that we as a family didn't deserve to be lied to about me being a boy, about what this would entail, about what the risk would be, and about this being the only choice for me, because it wasn't. And my mom and dad were completely reasonable in what they wanted for me. And it hurt. It hurt for them every step along the way to see my body change, to see parts of it get removed, to see me basically be transformed into somebody who I wasn't, somebody completely unrecognizable over the course of the last few years. It was so incredibly painful and traumatic for my mom and dad. And I think that they went through just as much pain as I did because they went through it with me.
Mm. Now, you've been doing a lot of campaign work. You've appeared at a number of hearings at a number of states and been working with people to get legislation changed around this. In light of the WPATH file report, what sort of progress are you making now? Is it getting easier to get in front of some of these lawmakers and actually have these discussions?
Yes. So I started speaking out about what happened to me when I was 17 years old. And there were several reasons as to why. I had some nieces and a nephew come to the picture. And I was a youngish child, so I never really had that experience of having to babysit or take care of other children. So I didn't really understand just the value of innocence until I saw it up close and I started playing with my baby nephew, my baby relatives, and helping to take care of them and look after them. And it was then that it really hit me, this is so precious. And I also started to understand a little bit how my own innocence was taken advantage of and ripped away from me at a young age. I also had been in contact with a community of detransitioners online who had been through much of the same exact things I had, and some of them had it a lot worse than I did. And I felt very, very quickly after coming into contact with these people that I had a responsibility to use my own voice, because these people, many of them were uniquely traumatized and in much worse situations than I. And I wasn't in the best situation myself. I had lost all my friends. I lost all my support from the transgender community and from my doctors. And I basically had to figure out my detransition completely on my own, which is the case for most of us who stop transitioning. But I felt determined to get my life together and to start talking about what happened to me, because what made me unique was that most of these people were adults and most of them had been through the process of transitioning while they were over the age of 18. But I went through this while I was very young, and I still was very young at the time. I was still a minor, and I thought, what better time to jump in than now? And I really wasn't expecting much out of it. I didn't expect to really become like an activist or an advocate, really. I didn't know what where this would take me. I just hope that, you know, my story would reach somebody out there and that it would help them with it, in some way, that it would educate people. But I started having so many people reaching out to me. I started having reporters asking for my story. I started having parents and family members of gender dysphoric people, and then eventually detransitioners and people who were retransitioned themselves reaching out to me. And it was just absolutely insane how quickly my story was just picking up steam. And one day I was invited out to speak on legislation to help protect other children and to stop what happened to me from happening ever again. And this has happened many, many times since then. And there have been many people, many other detransitioners following suit after I started speaking and joining the fight to change history for the better.
It's wonderful.
And since then, about, I think, 26 states now in the U.S. have passed some measure or some law to at least partially restrict this for use in children. And I have spoken to many communities as well, in different churches, at colleges and high and universities, in youth groups, with different organizations like Turning Point and Young America's Foundation. And I've found that pretty much every community, every town, no matter how little, no matter how rural, there is at least one person who is being affected by this in some way. But at the same time, so much change has happened just within the past few years of people like me and our families stepping up for what's right. And it's just filled me with so much hope. It's so incredible, because when I was little, I had this dream of leaving home one day and going out on this adventure and making all sorts of friends, while also maybe hopefully making change in the world. And I'm doing exactly that. And it's just such an honor to be a part of such a wonderful fight.
So what, just as we end, what do you wish now? So you now, what do you wish you could have told your 12-year-old self back then before you started this transition?
If I were to speak to my 12 to 13-year-old self, I'd tell her everything that I really wanted and needed to hear at the time. I'd say, those feelings that you have right now are not out of the ordinary at all. Every woman growing up, every girl going through puberty and going through the motions and all the changes that come with it, especially physically, has felt the sense of discomfort of sometimes wanting to be somebody else, of not wanting to go through all this. And that's completely normal. And it's something, I think discomfort is a part of life, and it's a necessary one. And it helps us, it pushes us to get better, to become better people. And you have to learn how to become comfortable with the uncomfortable. And the issue never was your body or the way that you were born. It's simply the way that you feel about it. And this isn't your only means out of that feeling. You don't have to transition. You don't have to be a slave to doctors and the pharmaceutical industry for the rest of your life. You can learn how to become comfortable with the things that are difficult about being a woman. And that's ultimately what's helped me the most with my feelings of discomfort around my sex. Just learning that, as hard as it can be sometimes, well, life is hard for either sex. And I've seen that through my own experiences transitioning. I've seen just how difficult it can be for young men. It's not easy for either of us, but there's beauty in those hardships that come in life. And your identity doesn't come from what body parts you have or how you dress or what you call yourself. It's the things that you do. It's the things that you do for the people around you and to better the world around you.
Oh, well, look, Chloe, it has been an utter delight to talk to you this morning. This is Chloe Cole. Now, Chloe is here for the Family First Forum on the Family this weekend. And if you want to see more of Chloe, I actually watched your interview with Myla Rose and with Jordan Peterson. So you've spoken to some very incredible people. So anywhere else that you want to point people if they want more information on you or your work or your writings in social media or elsewhere?
So my main accounts are on X and Instagram, and I also run a YouTube channel where I post some of my advocacy adventures and interviews with other people who have detransitioned. And my username on all of those is Chucole, Chooocole. That's Chooocole. But you also should be able to find me just by looking up Chloe Cole as well.
Wonderful. Well, Chloe, you enjoy the rest of your time in New Zealand, and we are absolutely delighted to have you this morning here on Reality Check Radio. And I'll hand you back to Paul now. Good. Thank you very much, Chloe. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.